In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
This is the Mighty Manfred and Little Steven's Underground Garage with your coolest conversations presented by Hard Rock. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. The Gorgor Girls are a longtime favorite of ours in the Underground Garage. Bloodshot Records has recently reissued the band's third album, Get the Gore, via their Barrel Select series. Joining us today to talk about the reissue and her various music projects is the band's frontwoman, Amy Gore. First, though, we'll take a listen to a little bit of Fox in a Box off of the album, and afterwards I'll be back with Amy for your coolest conversations presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Well, she's high to try. She goes to where I will not. She's always on fire. She's a teen dream, making all the little girls scream. You know that she's a fox in a box. But she's made for success.
With the Mighty Manfred and Little Steven's Underground Garage, and it's time for our coolest conversations. Today I'm joined by singer, guitarist, songwriter Amy Gore. As Detroit's queen of the garage rock scene, she fronted the Motor City's Gorgor Girls. We feature them here in the Underground Garage, and their third album, 2007's Get the Gore, has recently been reissued by Bloodshot Records as part of their 30-year anniversary Barrel Select series. Hey Amy, how are you?
Hi Manfred, how are you?
Fine. Thank you for joining me.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me. I'm doing great today.
Excellent. Well, congratulations on the album's reissue.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm thrilled. Bloodshot, you know, wanted to reissue it, and it looks really great. Sounds amazing.
So what is this Barrel Select series, and why did Bloodshot want to reissue the album?
Well, they changed ownership, and the new group, they're based in, I think, Nashville. They went through the catalog and they picked out records that they really liked personally and wanted to, I guess, keep in print. So we made the list. I'm so grateful and happy about it.
Way cool. Now, I know there are 14 tunes on it. Thinking back to when you guys were working on the album, did you have everything like prepared before you went in, or did you work up any of these songs actually in the studio?
You know, I used to kind of try that, like my first record and a single, and it didn't work out that great. So I work up all my songs and we rehearse them before we go in.
Yeah. And so the for the album, there are like four cover tunes on there, a couple of garage rock things, a cool Crystals tune. It's really, you know, out of the covers, I'm going to get to the other one that really kills me, but to talking about these tunes, the two garage rock things, the So Sophisticated, there was like the Texas Band, the Lavender Hour, and then they're the Trees from Chicago with You Lied to Me Before, which is tough stuff. Well, how did you come across these tunes?
Those I was turned on to by Freddie Fortune of Fortune and Maltese fame. Particularly that You Lied to Me Before. And it's very I don't know, it's very, like, it's relevant today in our strange world we live in. And it just turned out to be such a, like, crowd pleaser. I think also because, like, I mean, you've got, like, the interplay of the fuzz line, which I play, and then that killer solo that the Hammer, my guitar player, Marlene Hammerly plays. They interplay really well, I think, like the roughness of the fuzz tone and then her, like, more, it almost sounds like she's playing a telly on that, but she's not, she's playing a Gretsch, but just like two different tones, two different styles. And I think they're just really dynamic together.
Yeah. Well, and so you guys, if people aren't familiar with you guys overall, I mean, you kind of run this gamut from sort of girl groupy sounding things to just this tough sort of, you know, 60s inspired garage rockness. It's just really way cool. So the Crystals tune, They All Grown Up, that's a, you know, I mean, the Crystals of course had huge hits, but that's like a B-side to something. What is this? Do you know what that's the flip side of?
I don't. That was, I heard that on a cassette tape like a million years ago, and I don't remember where I got that, but it's such a, and I kind of rearranged it a little bit, like it's a little bit stylistically different, but the, you know, the lyrics and the song is the same. And I don't know what B-side it is. I'm a bad record geek right
well,
now.
Well, in fact, I'm just assuming it's a B-side. Maybe it's not. I do know it's a, you know, Ellie Greenwich, Jeff Berry tune.
Yeah, it's, right.
Mm-hmm. And one thing I love about the cadence of it is, you know, you're singing, do what I want to do. I'm all something about being all grown up. And then there's this pause and stay out late.
Yeah.
It's like, that's the epitome of, like, from a, you know, preteen, especially, sort of like, what's it to be all grown up is you get to stay out late.
Stay out late. And if he wants a kiss, she might say, all right. So it's kind of a nod to the concept of consent. Like, you know, she'll think about it, get back with you.
Yeah. Right. Well, so there's one other cover on there. It was just awesome. And when I was trying to dig up stuff on the right, when I first heard it, the song is Where Evil Grows.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. Just a title there alone, you know. And at first I thought, was that some kind of, from some sort of biker movie or something?
Right.
You know, and
I
made the assumption that there was some garage rock thing. I was digging around. And then I found out this Canadian duo, the Poppy Family. And it's like, what? And then I thought, you're from Detroit, so there must be some tie into the hearing them. So how did you know that song?
So, well, Terry Jacks penned Seasons in the Sun, that I'm sure a lot of people are familiar
with. Oh, yeah, I know that. Yeah.
Yeah.
We had Joy, we had fun. We had Seasons
in the Sun. Yeah.
So this is before Seasons in the Sun?
I believe so, yeah.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Poppy Family is a Canadian group, and being in Detroit here, we could hear CKLW, which is an AM station. I think it's 800. And they're, you know, they broadcast out of Windsor, which is just across the Detroit River. And so that's, like, you know, on the dial over here in Detroit. And I believe part of Canadian radio is they have to play so many Canadian artists. So, you know, I grew up flipping around and hearing Anne Murray and, you know, the Poppy Family. on the radio. So I heard it on the radio.
And there's sort of, and you, now you told me this, you sent me a thing to say what this song is actually about. And I never would have picked up about it. What, you know, cause it's a cool song. The original is cool, but I mean, your interpretation of it has got this, it really adds this extra kind of sort of dimension to it. It's hard for me to articulate with words, and also the instrumentation on there. Is there like a sitar on there in a couple of lines? It sounds sort of.
Yeah, there's a sitar, and a good friend of mine, Eric Solsheimer, played the sitar on that track, and he owns Caveman Vintage Guitars in Los Angeles. So go visit his store. He's got amazing stuff. And he was our guitar tech on tour for a while. And so he played, I think he had a sitar, and that's how we got the idea, I believe, to have him play it on the record.
Oh, that is so cool. So you want to give the reveal? What is the evil that is growing?
The evil is the paper industry, paper manufacturing. It's about environmental pollution, actually.
Which is so wild because if you when you listen to the song, it's like, you know, the Poppy family singing as I don't know if you're a husband or wife, boyfriend, girlfriend, just man or woman singing, but they're singing in unison, and you think it's this relationship, like one of the other is sort of making the other one evil too, because there's some line about the evil's growing in me, and then it's only about pollution. So now suddenly I'm in my mind is that the Native American with the tear running down his cheek or whatever.
Yeah, well, there's that lyric, if I could build a wall around you. And that kind of, to me, is a nod to more direct of what the song was about.
Right, right. Well, hey, so one of the original tunes on there, Pleasure Unit, that lists Kim Fowley as a co-songwriter. So, you know, Kim Fowley used to be on the air here in the Underground Garage.
For a minute, he was... like he lived in Redding, California, but he was infatuated with the idea of moving to Detroit. And I don't know if you're familiar or if you've been on the receiving end of this, but Kim Fowley did a lot of work over the phone, and he would kind of rapid fire people and just like these long, long phone conversations. And he actually just riffed on, you know, he wrote those lyrics over the phone.
Are you implying that he was just sort of, just on the spur of the moment came up with the lyrics?
Yeah, he did. Mm-hmm.
And so how did he wind up calling you? I mean, how did you wind up finding each other and finding you and wanting to collaborate?
Well, I met him. He had another, like a moment where he was coming to Detroit, I think in the late 90s, maybe. And he put together a showcase and a bunch of bands played and recorded. And then, you know, he connected with a bunch of folks. And then through, I believe, Little Steven, actually, through when the radio station first started up and Little Steven started doing the festivals, he became just kind of more, I think, entrenched in the Detroit world. And he was just calling around and he was kind of testing the waters of if he should move to Detroit. And one of his phone calls was to my house at the time. And he just, you know, we were talking about, he was influenced by, or he was referencing in this song, the TV show Desperate Housewives. And like the lyrics are like, you know, I'm a pleasure unit, eating cake and credit cards, like just about being a female who wants to be a housewife, who wants to just be kept and just have all these things given to her. That's what it was about. But then, you know, the song has a twist. It's I'm not your secret dream. I'm not your weekend bottle blonde.
You know, he's got he's since passed on. He was, you know, the manager of the Runaways back in the early 70s, and they featured Joan Jett and Lita Ford in their lineup. You know, he's certainly a character. A lot of unsavory stuff has come to light about him over the years. How do you feel about any of that? I mean, did that impact any of the stuff, well, your relationship with him or dealing with him or color it in any way?
Yeah. I mean, I hadn't heard of that when we were working on this song, or when I was, you know, taking phone calls from him, but, you know, I'm of the camp of, you always believe the woman, you believe the victim. And I don't see any reason not to. So I think it's unfortunate that he felt he needed to dominate to that level. And, you know, in my phone calls with him, I kind of stopped talking with him because he got really rough and really strange. And I just thought, oh, I'm not into this, you know?
Let's get back to the record. So before we started chatting here, we were taking a listen to Fox in a Box. And now, so this is a cool one too. Well, they're all cool, but so Pam Grier, the inspiration for that one, dedicated to people. What's the story on Fox in a Box?
So Pam Grier is like my, you know, my spirit animal, and my, you know, she's who I would vote for president of the world is Pam Grier. And there was a compilation or like a box set of her films put out. This is, you know, back when DVDs were happening, and it was called Fox in a Box. And I, you know, my guitar player, Marlene Hammerly, the Hammer, had that. And we were just like so taken by how awesome it was. And so that was the name of the song. And then it's dedicated to the Canadian artist Peaches, who I love so much. And we played a couple festivals with her. And it's kind of really influenced by one of her songs. It's called Boys Wanna Be Her. And just, you know, it's celebrating the gal who's free, who has complete control over herself and her body and wants to party like everyone else does. And that's what it's about.
And so did you co-write that with The Hammer, with Marlene?
Uh-huh, yep. Cool.
So where is she these days?
She is in Florida. She's in Orlando, Florida. And she is working on a heavy psych project, like psychedelic rock.
Well, cool. All right. So a couple of other tunes on the album I want to touch on here. I love sweet potatoes. I don't know if you know this, but to me, it's just like the perfect food. And the Woggles do have a sweet potato song, but it's basically just mashed potato, you know, just yelling out sweet potato instead of mashed potato. And then I do, I do shout out, you know, like home souffles all the way, home fries, and, you know, just different things you can do, sweet potatoes, because of pies. And so it's always, I think, important to offer, you know, not just tell people about sweet potatoes, but give them opportunities to use sweet potatoes, eat sweet potatoes. And you have just a really cool song about a sweet potato. So what, do you have any infatuation with sweet potatoes? Is that your favorite vegetable, or just happen to write a song about a sweet potato?
Yeah, I love the vegetable, but the song is about a particular kind of gentleman, kind of man who, you know, my character was, you know, infatuated with, and she's calling him a sweet potato. He knows how to dance, and she thinks he's sweet.
So, what's your favorite way to cook a sweet potato?
Oh boy. I think I would roast a sweet potato.
You would roast a sweet potato. Yeah.
How about
that
you?
Sounds good. I'll come over with some sweet potatoes. That track Casino that's on there, it seems like Casino was on an EP that came out before Get the Gore. What's the story on Casino?
Yeah, before we signed up with Bloodshot Records to do a full length, Casino was a newer song I'd written, and we had a EP that we were touring on at the time, and that became part of this full length record. So I conceived of that song. This is super not cool, but I was Christmas shopping in JCPenney's for a gift for a family member, and for some reason I got hit with that bass line, and I thought, this is pretty good, and I like went right home and wrote that song.
Wow, you were in the Golden Rule store and you got the inspiration.
Yes. That's new by JCPenney.
All right, well, cool. So I can't remember, I don't believe I've mentioned this yet or asked you about this yet, but this album was, you recorded this with Jim Diamond, right?
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
And did you do all your records with Jim?
Yeah, actually we did. We did all of our records he had on Elizabeth Street. It's no longer there. The building is literally gone. It was at one point it was a poultry factory, the building, and it had gone through a number of reincarnations. And the most recent one was Jim Diamond's studio that he built in there, which was always a super fun place to go because, I mean, like the roof leaked. It was, you know, very compromised integrity of the building, but it had so much character and so much great music came out of there. And I think the story is that little Steven actually visited there and went into the control room, and I think his quote was, "You make records here?" Indeed he did.
Indeed he did. Well, what you got some goodies, the reissues got some goodies, right? There's like inserts, artwork, what all is on there?
Yeah, there's some like posters. I'm so glad that they reached out to me and wanted to do this because I got to go through my archive, which I hadn't visited in a moment. And there's some really cool posters that people made for the band over time. And I mean, two of them on here are mine. And it's kind of funny, like I've forgotten how I'd made these, but I was into collage at this point, and I would like cut out the letters with, I would like trim them out and like do like color overlays and stuff. And it's just interesting to me to remind, like, that's where my art school comes out. I'm an art school dropout. And then there's actually a poster and a ticket stub from our first show in Mexico City. We played three shows in Mexico City over the life of the band, and it was always like the funnest and most amazing time playing there because we played these big, like grand old, you know, like decrepit venues and with very sketchy sound equipment and production, but it was always really, really fun. And the people were just out of control. And I remember I did an interview after a show, and the interviewer's first question to me was, "Do you believe in God?" And I was like, wow, okay, this is going to be a different interview than I'm used to giving.
And so what did you say?
I said, "Can I get back to you on that?" No, I don't remember what I said, honestly. I don't recall what I said. I probably said yes, and her name is Pam Grier, maybe.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so so the Gorgor Girls, you know, take your name from the Herschel Gordon Lewis movies, like from 1972.
Yeah, yeah. There was a back in the days before there was Netflix or any of that stuff, there was a store, independent movie store, a VHS rental store in the neighborhood I lived, and it was called Thomas Video. And I remember seeing the spine of the VHS. It said Gorgor Girls. And I remember looking at that and going, that's my band name. Like, that is what I'm doing. And I, you know, checked it out and watched it, and it's ridiculous and awesome. And, you know, it's peak DIY exploitation style. And I just fell in love with that whole genre, the B movie exploitation. And I was lucky enough to meet H.G. Lewis and, you know, have a relationship with him. Just like, we would write each other and talk on the phone a little bit. And I think he was a genius in a lot of ways. And he wrote the liner notes, not the liner notes. He contributed to the notes on this record.
On the back of the album, right, the quote is, "To appreciate this music, you have to have a streak of wildness, a fierce independence of spirit, and an absolute belief in the unusual, the strange, the unpredictable, the offbeat, and even the generally unacceptable."
Yeah. H.G. Lewis.
So he also did a movie, She Devils on Wheels, right? You know that?
I do, and I love that movie. I think I've watched that more than Gorgor Girls.
Okay, well, did you guys ever cover the song, Man-Eaters on Motorbikes?
I think I did online, but not, like, legitimately with the band, you know, like, recording it in the studio. I know that's the one song I believe Poison Ivy sung with the Cramps. Like, there is a recording of Poison Ivy singing that song somewhere.
And you guys, you toured with the Cramps, didn't you?
Yeah, we did. We twice. We toured with them in 2003 and then I think in 2004 or 2005. They wanted us back. It was great.
And so the Gorgor Girls started about when? About 1997?
Yeah, I think I was kicking around and playing in a band that I called the Gorgor Girls then. And then the first album came out on Get Hip Records in 2000. I think we recorded it in 1999, 2000. I've had some of the really coolest chicks in my band. I've been very, very lucky, like great musicians. And it's awesome.
Well, so the album's been reissued. Is there any chance there'll be any sort of reunion show?
You know, we played as a band in 2016. We played in Mexico City and we had some shows in Detroit here. We had a sold out show here, and then the Mexico City shows were great. They were huge. But right now the drummer that I worked with, that the band has worked with, Alicia Taylor, she works for the WWE, I think it's called. So worldwide, or no, NXT, wrestling. God forgive me. I forgot the exact name. Anyway, she's an announcer. She's a wrestling announcer on cable TV. She's a star. And my bass player works on some stuff with me. I actually work with her and Nikki Corvette. We played recently with Nikki Corvette singing, and Liana and I, and our original drummer, Deb Agoli, who was the original drummer on the first record, she played with us too. So super fun times. And that's probably what the band's going to keep doing, are things like that.
Well, you meant, so I saw then on the liner notes, Nikki Corvette is singing backing vocals.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And so was that the beginning of y'all's relationship? Because you went on to form together, play as Gorvette.
Yeah. Right? Yep. So our good friend, I introduced Nikki and I. We met at Spaceland. She came to one of my shows, one of the Gorgor Girls shows, and we just kept in touch, kept writing. And when she'd come home to Detroit, we would hang out. And then she ended up moving back to Detroit from LA. And we thought, you know, what we need around here, what would be fun to play in, is a punk rock cover band. that was like the impetus for it. So we wrote a couple songs and then we did like covers and we ended up playing. Oh my God. We opened for the Donnas. We did a mini tour with the Donnas and we played at the Highline in New York and someone saw us, DJ Miss Guy, who's a fantastic DJ. He's the singer of the Toilet Boys, who I love. Anyway, he, somehow he recommended us to play with Blondie. And there was this rumor going around, you're going to play with Blondie. And I thought, yeah, right. I'll believe that. And I mean, within a week I got a phone call and we were supporting Blondie on their, endangered species tour in 2010.
Wow.
Yeah. Crazy.
But so like is Gorvette, so he still worked kind of work with Nikki, but is Gorvette an active thing or not?
It's not. I think it's more, you know, a Nikki Corvette, group. Like we, you know, it's the Nikki and the Corvettes cover band, really.
Okay. Yeah. Well, back in like 2019, the Roslins, who are based in San Diego, released an album, Out of Reach. I remember you performing with the group. You're on the album. So how did you wind up getting yourself out to Southern California?
So my great good friends, Anya, Mike and Anya Stacks, run Ugly Things magazine, and they were putting on a 20th anniversary show, like a mini, like a festival for their magazine, Ugly Things. And they wanted to have, as part of the weekend, like a girl group, you know, all girl band celebrating ladies in the garage rock scene. And they knew I was coming out there. And Anya reached out and said, hey, would you want to play a one-off, you know, kind of a tribute band, like Girls in the Garage tribute band. And I said, yeah, sure. Cool. And the response was so, you know, overwhelming. And we had so much fun. We decided to keep doing it. So we ended up playing like mini tours, you know, on the region, Southern California, and then we did a record.
And is that any more Roslyn sort of things on the future or not?
Yeah. I mean, the last show that I played with them was in 2019 in Spain. We played the Purple Weekend. Yeah, yeah. We played that and a couple other shows and then came back from that. And then we went into lockdown. That was like December 2019. And I remember I came back and I got deathly ill and I had a really bad cough and I was exhausted. And I'm kind of wondering if I might've had like what we're now calling COVID, you know, I don't know.
Right. Right.
But I mean, within months we were in lockdown and the pandemic started. So, I think the first show I played out of the pandemic actually was with the Roslins. We played, the Tiki Oasis when it was in San
Diego. Oh, that's in San Diego too.
Yeah.
So how old were you when you learned guitar?
I took lessons when I was 14.
And why? Why did you want to learn guitar?
I just was drawn to it. I wanted to play. I played piano before that, piano lessons. And I just thought, man, the guitar, I really want to play that. And so my parents were gracious enough to, you know, I think I rented a guitar. It was a white Fender guitar and went to these lessons. And I was terrible, you know, like I tortured my family. And, you know, Mel Bay, got the Mel Bay book. And, you know, I played, then I started playing along with like Chuck Berry records. And that's when my playing started to change and the Ventures started to, you know, play Ventures songs like Dick Dale, things like that.
Well, Amy, why would you be playing a Chuck Berry and Ventures and Dick Dale? I mean, as you're playing guitar, what led you towards that? What pointed you towards that?
I liked it.
Oh, that's
he
is the king of the surf guitar. It's true.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, yes. But I mean, how would you? I mean, what age are you here? Because you start taking lessons at 14.
Yeah, 14. And that.
But and then when is it where the Chuck Berry thing and getting some dick all kind of come together?
That would be like late teens, early 20s.
Late teens, right? So are you listening to oldies stations or how?
I was just always drawn to, you know, record stores, music in general, comic books. I was really into comic books. So like things that are
like, what kind of comic books when you say comic books? You reading the Archies? Are you looking superhero stuff or what?
Oh, like Love and Rockets. I liked.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Like Love and Rockets. And what was the other one? Oh my God. Love and Rockets was the main one, but then, you know, just superheroes in general, but very like graphic things, like Wonder Woman, of course.
So this is before, so you're into that kind of stuff before you get to college years.
Mm-hmm.
And so when did you first started playing in a group?
I didn't start. It was kind of late. Well, I mean, I played with people in really informal situations in like my late teens. And after like moving out of my parents' house, it became more of a adult endeavor, like, getting in a car and driving to rehearsal. And I would say my first band was probably age 21, 22.
And that was
Gorgon.
So give me an idea. Was that like all women or was this just dudes and girls? You're the only woman or what? What's the...
We started out with a guy drummer, actually. Jeff Klein.
You mean that you're talking about the Gorgor girls
yeah.
now?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. It was two girls and a guy. And then, yeah. And then
So were the Gorgor girls like kind of like this sort of early versions of the Gorgor girls? That was the band, the first band you were playing in?
Yeah. That was the first band I was playing in. Yeah. We played the 4th Street Fair, which was a festival in Detroit. It's no longer... to great dismay, it was a really great festival. And then our first show in Detroit was, I think my first show ever in Detroit, I think was opening for the Detroit Cobras at the Gold Dollar.
Oh, wow. And yeah, the Gold Dollar, right. Wow,
yeah.
That was just that, you know, play there before. And it's kind of like, here we are into Mad Max and the post-apocalyptic soundscape. Yeah. This is great.
This very is great. Cinematic.
And there was a Chinese food restaurant somewhere around there. And that was like the only place to eat. And we went in there. And we walk in and there had been like, we could hear as we were coming in the door, there's like chatter. And the moment the door shuts behind us, it's like dead silent. And every person turns around and stares at us. And they were all older Chinese gentlemen. And it was like, what is this? A Chinese mafia in here or something?
Hopefully. Yeah.
It was weird. Well, then in that case, I should have felt safe, you know,
mm-hmm.
you know, that nobody was going to get whacked maybe, or hopefully. Hey, so right now, your primary focus is like law school. You're like working on a law degree.
Yep, I'm halfway through a law degree. Yes.
So why lay down the guitar and pick up the law book? What's going on?
I wouldn't say I'm exchanging my weapon, but I'm adding another weapon to my, you know, arsenal. And yeah, I've always been drawn to just finding out why things are the way they are and what makes things the way they are. And I love reading and writing. I've always been like an avid reader. And I remember my 7th grade teacher, we had a mini debate. It was in 7th grade and my 7th grade teacher said, you should be a lawyer. And Dave Zania, who owns the Magic Stick, said to me at one point, you should be a lawyer. And I didn't really know what lawyers did. You know, I just thought they were like, you know, boardrooms and suits and things like that. And just learning more about history and politics and why things are the way they are, I just realized like that there's such a driving force in understanding law and figuring out how things work. And so it fascinates me.
Right. But you have this musician background. Are you trying to specialize in entertainment law, or is there some other facet to the judicial landscape that you're interested in?
Yeah, I'm studying copyright law right now, and it's super interesting. Just, you know, like Napster and YouTube licensing things, and then, you know, infringement of songs. And I'm also really drawn to constitutional stuff. And oddly enough, I really enjoy the criminal law process. So I'm not totally sure where I'm going to end up, Manfred. You might, you know, you could see me anywhere in the law world.
Well, all right. Well, this is way cool. So I want us to take a listen to a track from your solo album. I guess it was when it came out, it was titled, you know, Amy Gore and Her Valentines in Love, right? In Love is actually the title of the album.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yep. In Love.
Okay. And so I guess the album came out around 2013. You had Jackson Smith playing in the lineup, who's the son of Patty and Fred, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's so cool group there. Also on the album, he had like this guy, Louis Resto, Dennis Coffey playing. Now, who were those guys that got like some long history to them? What's the story on those guys individually? Louis?
Dennis Coffey was one of the Funk Brothers.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. He played on Cloud Nine. He played on Ball of Confusion. You played on Psychedelic Shack, these Temptation songs. What else did you play on? He played on, oh, Someday We'll Be Together, the Diana Ross and the Supremes song. So he was a funk brother. He then he did his own thing. He played recorded a song called Scorpio, which I don't know if you've heard of it. It's an instrumental song. It came out in the 70s and it shot up the charts. He got a gold record for it. So he's a very well-known and legendary guitar player. And I was very lucky that I was able to take some lessons with him. I took a lesson with him, and his biggest thing to me was sit up straight.
Well, you just said that, and my back shot up, you know? Oh, yeah. Don't be slouching.
Put your fingers right.
Don't be slouching.
Right behind.
Well, because you had taken lessons with him, that was kind of like a way to connect with him to get him on the record?
No, I took lessons because I was, you know, in awe of his playing, and he's a very well-respected and legendary guitarist. And and then he happened to be kicking around the studio, and he came in and played on a song. And he's just a really cool guy. I know him. I know his wife. He's just a really awesome, learned and humble and very talented person.
And now so Louis Resto plays on the same track as Cadillac, is that song,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, totally.
So what's the story with Louis? How did you get, was he just hanging around the studio too?
Jackson really wanted him to play on this song. He's like, this song needs Louis Resto. Louis has worked with Patti Smith previously. He's also worked with, I think, Anita Baker in the Detroit world. And then especially in Detroit, he was the co-writer of the song Lose Yourself that's on the 8 Mile soundtrack. He collabed with Eminem. And so I'm very, very, very fortunate to just be in his orbit for a moment and have him play on this record.
Yeah, that's a cool, way cool record too. You do a great version of the Shocking Blues song, Send Me a Postcard. That's way cool. You sing that so well. But the cut that I wanted to take a listen to, one of your compositions, is called I'm Addicted.
Oh yeah. This this song is about coffee. Like literally. Coffee, because like that's my main addiction.
So when I was in college, I had a roommate, and he was an aspiring novelist.
Uh-huh.
And so he wrote this thing. It was really like a little Christmas story, a little short story thing. It was really cute, and it was about the single dad and his daughter. And it was part of the point of view was from the daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And what was weird was the daughter was supposed to be like 8 or maybe 10, but very, very, very youngish, 8 to 10. And it's like getting up in the morning with the dad, and she's having a cup of coffee. And it was like a little kid. And I was like, man, that's weird. You know, maybe a cup of cocoa or something if it's cold or something, but I can't imagine. So I always thought that was weird. He's like, no, that's not weird. And I was like, I don't, little kids drinking coffee to me is weird. Is that not weird?
So, but then, you know, my sister told me that, like, I guess kids' bodies process caffeine differently, that it gives the opposite effect. I don't know if that's true, but
So you're addicted to coffee. When did you start drinking coffee?
Oh my God. I don't know. Probably in my 20s.
Your 20s? Mm-hmm. And how many cups a day do you currently drink?
Well, as far as the unit of measurement, a cup, you know, it's not an 8-ounce cup we're talking about. I'm talking about mugs. I'm talking about pots. I would say I'm a pothead in the coffee realm, where I'm at least a pot a day, but it's spaced out. You know, it's early, then mid-morning, then lunch, and I try to cut it off at 3 p.m.
Well, I guess drinking a lot of coffee because it kind of ties in with being in law school, doesn't it? Trying to
stay
up and study stuff.
Yes, absolutely. But you know, I got to say, sometimes I find that it just enables me to make mistakes faster or something. So.
Oh, excellent! You got to get right through those mistakes, plow on through. As long as as long as we're learning from them, all part of the process, isn't it?
Oh, words of wisdom.
All right. Well, we're going to take a listen to that. Amy, thank you so much for talking with me today on our Coolest Conversations.
Thanks for having me, Manfred.
All right. We're going to take a listen to that track from Amy Gorner, Valentine's. That's off the album In Love, and the tune I'm Addicted in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
time without you. I want to die. Where are you, baby? You're all I need. Without you, I'm on my knees all the time. All the time. Everywhere I go, I search for you. I'll do anything that you want me to. If only I could get you off my mind. Now and forever, please be mine. Please be mine. Please be mine. I'm addicted. I'm addicted to you. I'm addicted.
Portion of I'm Addicted from Amy Gore and her Valentines from their album In Love here in Little Steven's Underground Garage. I'm the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to Amy for joining me on today's Coolest Conversations. Thanks also to Sammy Semenza for producing and Kurt Baker for editing our podcast. Chuck Prophet, he's an artist whose songs have been covered by the likes of Peter Wolf, Hart, Solomon Burke, Bruce Springsteen, and many others. His latest album, Wake the Dead, is out on Yep Rock Records and features influences from cumbia music. On it, he's joined by the group Jan Save. And Chuck will be our guest next time around to tell us all about the project. It's Chuck Prophet on your next Coolest Conversations, presented by Hard Rock and Little Steven's Underground Garage.
What can I do? I'm addicted. I'm addicted to you. Set me free.
Buddy, you're a boy. Make a big noise playing in the street. I'm gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace. Kicking your can all over the place.
Some things are better when they rock. The Seminole Hard Rock Hotels and Casinos rock around the clock with nonstop casino action, rooms fit for the king, pools, spas, restaurants, and clubs for every taste and temptation. Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tampa or Hollywood, Florida. We will rock you.